This is the Power Producers Podcast,
where we are refining and redefining the sales game.
Rule number one is you have to believe in yourself. You're the only one who doesn't think you belong in this appointment. The prospect has already validated your existence by scheduling time with you. Get it through your head you belong here, go in there, crush it, and close the deal.
A place where sales professionals can come to learn from other sales professionals and thought leaders that have mastered their craft.
The difference between a good salesperson and a best-in-class salesperson is only 2 minutes. By spending an extra 2 minutes on what you might think is a mundane task in the sales game, you separate yourselves from the pack, you grow your book of business, you close more deals, and you retain your accounts.
As well as their peers who are still striving for perfection to achieve their why.
I have a wife and 4 kids. Failure is not an option.
Real sales professionals. Real stories. Real results.
It's no different than being a professional baseball player. You can't be a one-trick pony. You have to be a 5-tool player in order to succeed in this game.
This is the Power Producers Podcast, production redefined. Are you ready to feel the power?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Power Producers, where we are refining, redefining the sales game. Today, Kyle and I are privileged to have another Kyle with us. Again, I'm outnumbered. If it's not the beard, it's the name. We have Mr. Kyle Stevens from RSS Insurance in Chattanooga, Tennessee. What's cooking, Kyle?
Just trying to figure out this insurance game.
Yeah, well, you're doing a decent job of it, man, based off of what I know about your numbers anyhow, you know? Before we get too much into it and kind of what your journey looks like or has been in the insurance piece, why don't you just give everybody a quick rundown of sort of what your background is and what led you to your job at RSS now?
Perfect. Yeah, so I've been with insurance about 5 years total, current agency about 3 years. And before that, like Kyle, sold ADP. Payroll and Total Source and PEO. So from that, I got to see insurance, how it worked, but also didn't like just getting paid on the first year's commission. So I was like, how do I keep doing this? Oh, those guys can sell what I have and also everything else and take care of a client. So from that, jumped into insurance, moved from Tuscaloosa, went to Alabama, and moved to Chattanooga. Been here about 10 years and never looked back.
Cool deal. So Chattanooga's a cool town, man. That's like when I lived in Birmingham, that was a great weekend trip town for us. 2.5 hours away, go hang out at Lookout Mountain, go see Rock City and Ruby Falls. By the way, people, if you've seen them once, no real need to go back. But there's a lot of stuff to do there. I mean, I can only imagine that it's changed a lot. And I mean, shoot, man, it's probably been 20 years since I've been to Chattanooga. What I will tell you, though, is one of the most epic fails of my adult life happened at a place there. Is there a place, I think it's called Big River Brewery. Is it still there?
It's downtown.
Okay, so I went to Big River Brewery, and their shtick was they brewed their own root beer and cream soda.
Oh, boy.
Was not aware. Refills not free. So I was like Forrest Gump on his White House tour with the Dr. Peppers. I bet you I crushed a dozen root beers and I get bill. And they hammered me. They hammered me for like $5 a piece for these root beers or whatever. So yeah, that was my experience. But
sorry we did that to you.
Yeah, it's all right, man. I mean, cool aquarium there and everything else.
I've only
else.
Been through. I've never stopped, really.
Well, that's 90% of the traffic on our roads, so yeah. We appreciate that. but yeah, it's come a long way. We've gotten some, battery plant, the processing graphites. I forgot the name of it, but it's coming to Chattanooga. There's a lot of really interesting things here and coming, so.
Well, the cool part for you, too, though, is you're kind of located between 3 states, right? Yep. I mean, Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee sort of all meet right there, right outside of Chattanooga. So that gives you a little bit of flexibility as far as where you can go to write business. So
we're talking about that this morning. The end of my neighborhood, the end of the street is actually Georgia. There's not a house there because it's Georgia. So with Georgia having what, double, 2.5, 3 times the rates of Tennessee, and then Alabama being in the middle, it's a great place.
That's interesting.
So talk Total Source for a minute. I mean, what your time, and not necessarily specifically Total Source, but I mean, were you doing just the payroll stuff, or were you payroll and PEO both in your time with ADP?
So I did both. So first, I was there 4 years. First 2.5 years were payroll, and then I got licensed to do the 401k. So it was a pay K, what they call it. And then the last year and a half, I did Total Source. So I made the transition because, you know, there wasn't much left, I guess you could say, for the small business. And I saw that that was the route that people wanted to go. But being in Chattanooga and having Humana as the only carrier, no one wanted it. So that was a very quick quick exit. So, but I mean, it's great. If it wasn't in Chattanooga and there was another place to sell it, if it was in Nashville, I'd probably still, there could still be in it, because the United, you know, everything about it, it's a niche product that may only fit 5% of the industry. But it's whoever fits it, you know, if they want to take all that liability and burden off them, it is really a great product, as long as you know the cost that you're paying for it as well.
That's always what David and I have talked about. I mean, you have a very narrow market that you're trying to go for with the PEO stuff, and you've got one thing you're selling. Like, you know, it's tough to pivot, or, you know, really there's nothing to pivot to. If you go in and you're talking something, you know, with insurance, we can talk about the workers' comp, and, you know, then we can talk about auto and how they relate, and you can kind of go back and forth. And with PEO, there's really no opportunity for that.
Yeah, I've even kept, you know, relationships with others. They'll reach out every now and then and say, hey, we can't place this workers' comp. You know, we do this. So, yeah, I mean, I started selling it when the ACA came out. And so the two people I did sell were basically forced to find a solution. And that's, I didn't see that continuing. So.
True.
Yeah, I mean, I think the PEO model is an interesting one. It's so much different everywhere else in the country outside of Florida. Like,
right.
We have so many flipping PEOs down here.
The birthplace of PEO.
It is. Yeah. And so, you know, how I explain it to people, I just tell them that in Florida, PEO equals cheap comp and payroll, because that's how people look at it. They're looking at it to go get a break on their workers' comp rates, get their payroll done. EPLI really doesn't matter to most of them. The HR benefits, value prop. Yeah.
A lot of it was benefits play, stuff that I ran into.
Yeah, but you were also at a PEO that was dealing with more white collar. I mean, when you get into some of these, like,
100%. Some of the ones that we deal with.
Garden variety PEOs down here. It's like, if you're a 3-man drywall operation, that's where you're going to go, period. Sure. Like, you're not going to get coverage for your comp monoline anywhere. And so you don't want to go to the Joint Underwriters Association. So, you know, the PEOs in Florida have figured it out that they can price pretty much whatever they need to make a ton of money on the workers' comp piece, because they have the flexibility of adjusting those rates to what they need them to be and then call it a day. Completely different in other parts of the country, though. In other parts of the country, they're selling, you know, value. They're selling the HR piece. They're selling even the benefits.
But it wasn't as prevalent as the stuff that you were just talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I bet you there's probably a couple hundred PEOs just in Florida.
Yeah,
like, I mean, from anywhere,
almost in the Tampa Bay area.
yeah, it's nuts. So I guess my question, Kyle, I mean, what you got really good training at ADP. I mean, we've done a couple of Shop Talk recordings already with Steven Sedlak, and we're going to do a couple more. You know, he's another ex-ADP guy. Actually, ex-ADP guy, Keystone guy. I don't know if you know Steven or not, but work comp guy. Definitely somebody you should know.
yeah, there you go.
The work comp effect, that's it. But you talk a little bit about ADP and how that prepared you for what you've experienced so far in the insurance world.
So the ADP's got it down to a science. I mean, if you know, every rep was recruited away after 2 to 3 years, pretty much, unless you went into management. You know, so that's what they want as well. So they are okay with training you. They're okay with doing that and having medical device sales or going to insurance or whatever it may be, because again, you're only getting paid, you know, first year's revenue, and then ADP gets the profit after that. So, but they've got it down to a science. I mean, my small business training initially, you know, it's you go in, you see, you drop in 10 places a day, you go see two CPAs a day, you go see two financial advisors a day. And then after that, if you're dropping in somewhere, you Cloverleaf, the term they use around each of those places that you dropped in on, saying, hey, I was, you're right here, you know, can I set an appointment with you? So everything was down to a science. Everything was graded so well. You know, your manager, and you had to put it in Salesforce. So if you just not, if it mm-hmm. wasn't in Salesforce, it didn't exist.
Exactly. The Cloverleaf thing, back up to that for a second. So you're talking about you're dropping in on a business, and so you'll just pop into a few that are around there that may be kind of in your small business wheelhouse that would Correct. Make sense. Gotcha. Yep.
So just, and they had, I mean, if you did the method that they had, you mm-hmm. you would succeed. So, you know, but there was, I think the biggest thing that I didn't start as fast as a lot of other reps because I tried to build kind of longer term relationships, which I think has helped me on insurance. So I tried to build the CPA relationships, the banker relationships, the attorney relationships, whereas most reps would come in, you know, prospect, sell, get the low hanging fruit, and then they have nobody mm-hmm. to refer them, or they just, you know, be worked, you know, done because they're so tired of everything. So I think that really building those relationships, but because I've had to change as well, I've had to change how I sell, you know, because it was a very transactional sell versus mm-hmm. a very relationship and a very, you know, very problem centric selling currently. So it's, there was a lot good to it. Basically, it's just the foundations of knowing what you need to do and doing it, and then being able to grade those things if they're working or not.
So talk about that for a second, because it is a totally different sale. You know, what had to change for you?
So biggest thing is, you know, just kind of reviewing, because even in my first experience with, you know, with commercial insurance, it was a very still transactional sale. The way I was trained was, you know, get in, quote it, hope that you'd get it, and then maybe you did, maybe you didn't. So I think it was having to see that that didn't work in insurance first, and then really diving in. Keystone's got a lot of great, you know, before we got into Killing Commercial, and then, you know, our agency, one of our agency owners, David, you know, is really the biggest reason why I came here, because he just, his relationship, you know, I've never seen someone relationship-wise sell things, know the amount, so it's just a different, after I lost enough deals, let's put it that way, going in, and then the incumbent basically matching my price, because I had zero relationship after getting that happen enough, you know, something had to change. And that's how we looked into other things of how, you know, how do you dethrone, how do you drive that wedge into that instead of just being a price play.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of the things that I think producers, a big mistake that producers make when they're first starting out, I mean, you identified it, it's a matter of going out and just writing the low-hanging fruit and getting volume to come through. And there's a couple of issues with that. The first one is they write everything under the sun, and it's not, you know, business that they really want to write. If you step back and look at it and say, is this ideally who we want to represent or whatever else? The answer 90% of the times, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. We're just writing what we have to because we need to validate. But the other piece is something that I've always done, and I think that it's a lost art to a certain degree, and that is building out your network, man. I mean, to me, I have always said I don't want to make 10 phone calls to get an appointment. I want to make one phone call and get 10 appointments, and I can do that if I've got the right CPA or the right lawyer or any number of other people. BNI and networking groups certainly have their place. They don't translate to middle market commercial No. very well. They translate to the lower end of middle market, but it's really more
it's small business.
Small business play.
What's the relationships that you get out of those? That, like, I'm in a BNI group and I have gotten my two niches from there, but it's been because of the two relationships or the, you know, referrals mm-hmm. I got. And, you know, one of my ground delivery, you know, my delivery drivers or delivery contractors, one of the HVAC guy in my previous group, you know, had a delivery contract. And from there, you know, wrote it, made the introductions, and have gotten 10 plus contractors. So it's not as much as it, you know, those things good as even there, if you build the relationships out, you know, they can do well.
Yep, I agree. I mean, it's not, you're not going to get rich off of writing the BNI stuff, but if you can, you know, get maybe, you know, one deal a year in there that's middle market or turns into something fruitful, well, then not only have you, you know, paid for your dues or whatever for the year, but you can kind of work that relationship, you know, moving forward. And that's ultimately the goal.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably over 4 years of my group, I've written, you know, probably 120 to 150,000 in revenue, you know, out of it. So, I mean, it's, but again, it was a lot of time I invested. I actually became the president, you know, of the group. I was the VP. I put in the time and built the relationships and went to everything else. It wasn't just, mm-hmm. you know, show up and get referrals. It was, who do I need to network with? Who's going to be able to help me and who do they know? Just like being out, you know, nothing changes with BNI. It's just, you just got to put the time in as of everything else.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I've still got relationships today from people that I mean, I was in a networking group. It wasn't BNI. But even like my first year that I had my license, I bet you a half dozen people from 20 years ago, I still have a relationship with where we refer business back and forth. I think that the thing I like about those networking groups is the discipline that they have. Right. I think that, look, I'll call it what it is. I think some of it's over the top, but I also understand that if I look at the average demographic of a person who gets a job in sales, they probably need that level of discipline in order to make it work right.
Right.
But I mean, my biggest problem always has been, you know, I think that the framework is good. I think it all boils down to who the leadership is of each one of these groups or operations. Because, I mean, and again, I'm using BNI, but I mean, it literally could be any of the leads groups that are out there. It boils down to who the leadership is and how much they're willing to hold people accountable. I'm not a big fan of like the rah-rah, you know, all of that stuff. Like I have a hard time with that, as does Kyle. I know that's not his favorite part.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that if you're in the right group and you have the right leadership that's holding people accountable, that works.
I want to back up to something you said, and maybe you can shed some light on it for some of the listeners. You said that you don't want to make 10 calls to get one appointment. You'd like to make one and get 10. So obviously that alludes to having good channel relationships and developing those partners. So what do you look for when you're meeting with somebody? How do you start that? What does that process look like for you? I know it's not just an immediate thing like we've just been talking about. It takes time to massage those things, but maybe you shed a little bit of light on that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, it truthfully, this is more difficult for me now than it was back earlier in my career for nothing other than geography, because I'm not in the West Shore District anymore where
you're not doing happy hours on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Monday through Friday. But I mean, you know, I used to, like, I always made it a point. I never ate lunch by myself. Like, when I first got into the game, I was in a part of town where I had access to all the big law firms, all the big accounting firms, and I always would reach out. And so for me, at this point, I think my answer is twofold. Number one, I do think if you're a new producer, to get used to that discipline and to begin building your network, I do think that you should be in a leads group at least to start out with. I think that that gives you a good framework. And then what I did was I basically just said, hey guys, why are we paying all this money to be part of a leads group? We could just go start our own amongst ourselves. You know, we're already having this and we could save all the money. And that's actually kind of what happened, is we just created our own little informal relationships. I think that that's a good place to start. But for me, you know, one of the best places you can start, and this can happen literally with the very first account that you write, you need to interview your clients. Find out who their people are. Who are they using, right? Who are the service providers? Who's your accountant? Who's your banker? Who's your attorney? Talk to me about where you get your office supplies, your payroll, all of that. And, you know, by the time you have that person as a client, notice I didn't say prospect. By the time you have them as a client, you have the ability. I mean, they're going to know who you are personally, professionally, who you're going to gel with and who you're not. And my theory with that has always been, that if I ask them about a person that they buy payroll from and they're a revenue, a $50,000 revenue account to me, mm-hmm. I like my chances that that payroll person's going to be in other accounts the same size is mm-hmm. what I like to write. And so if they're a natural fit there, then my client can simply say, oh yeah, you know what? My payroll guy's the best, or my payroll lady's the best. You'd hit it off with them great. I'm going to ask him, can you set up a meeting? Can you make an introduction? And I don't necessarily need them to go to a lunch meeting to introduce this, but at least get a quick email and then go have lunch and decide if this is somebody that I have the ability to work with. But again, listen, I start every single one of these conversations the same way. I kept saying phone call, but if I'm having lunch with somebody, we're not on our cell phones talking across the table to each other. I start every conversation the same way, and it is, what, tell me what I can do to help you build your business,
mm-hmm.
right? I want to go in and immediately tell them, look, I have the ability to help you. Tell me how I can help you. I want to, you know, because I think if I help so many you, people, you're going to be more open to helping me.
I think so many people do it the opposite way and then start just saying all the things that they're trying to look for that they can get out of the other person. And that's just, you know, a completely backwards way to do it. I will say that your point about asking them and I've seen you do this in meetings and picked up on it early on, but you're not just coming out and asking them to say, hey, you know, by the way, who's your accountant? Who's your banker? Like it comes up naturally in conversation based on things that we're talking about. You know, it's not, you're just asking them point blank. Like the question we talked about a few weeks ago when you're so tell me your pain points. Like, no.
Yeah. tell me where you're feeling pain. No, right. But I mean, you know what? It's an easy thing to do. Like one of my number one tricks, by the way, people, I'm getting ready to give you a really good one.
Here we go.
Yeah. Just name an accounting firm and ask them if that's who they use. Doesn't matter if it is or not, because they're going to say mm-hmm. no. Say, hey, just out of curiosity, you don't happen to use so-and-so for your accounting, do you?
And no, because we use this person.
No, they're actually,
tell
we
you.
Use
We used to do the
such.
Same thing with the office supplies. I would walk in and say, you guys just go to Office Depot, right? And they either say yes or no. And if they didn't, they'd tell me where they went.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, you know, I think that that's one way you can do it, because mm-hmm. then they're like, well, wait a minute. That's a pretty big accounting firm. You're connected with them. You know, you can actually ask a question with the wrong person and gain some credibility with it. Mm-hmm. Because if you're dealing with like one of the big accounting firms in town and you ask them if they're with them, they're like, oh, wow, no, we're not. But if you're affiliated with them in some way, that they look at you differently. But I think mm-hmm. that's one way to do it. But, you know, I have a form that I created that's basically like a client profile. It's actually something we distribute in Killing Commercial to everybody when they go through the modules that they can use. And it's got a series of things on there that they can ask to help, you know, with this and several other aspects of it. But it only really works. I don't go in with that form and then just ask the questions and then write the answer down. You know, sometimes when you're going to find that out, you need to look at like two or three things. I mean, I think this is actually really, really good feedback here. Think of two or three things that you want to get out of that person. Like if you want to know who their attorney is, where they're getting their payroll, and who the benefits broker is or whatever. Okay, think about how you're going to handle that in conversation and mm-hmm. know these are the things I want to know. I don't have to have a form, but I'm going to ask questions around that. So, you know, if you're going in to meet with somebody and their renewal is in April 1, or, you know, well, corporate returns are a month later, right? May 15th. But say they have a May 1 renewal. You can be like, man, I bet you have a lot going on with your taxes. That's crazy. And boom, now you know. And say, you know, I didn't reach out to you originally, you know, on January, because I know you're probably going through your benefits renewal at that point. Are you still with so-and-so? Because you can find that out from the free ERISA website for the 5500s, right? So you can have that information going in as well. And, you know, you can just ask those questions conversationally, and you don't even need to mm-hmm. do it successively. You just boom, 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 right in a row, you know, as you're going through. And when you walk out of the meeting, you make a note of that, you put it in your records, and now you know who that is. And the next time you talk with that person, maybe you have one or two things you want to get the answer to. You don't have to get it all at one time. But, right. you know, for me, I've always been the believer, as much as, you know, as much as we tried to make this an official role at Florida Risk, as far as channel partnership development, you know, we created a role for that clown. I think that's the biggest way that you can build your network, man. I mean, to this day, I will tell you that the level of cold call activity that I have to do is nil. I don't, because at this point, my clients refer me business and my network refers me a ton. And, you know, it's a great feeling to know, but it goes back to what we talk about in terms of being a five-tool player. Somebody asked me one time, what are the five tools? I can rattle off five tools, but I can take any process that we have inside the industry and also say, you have to be a five-tool player around that.
In this,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that you know, getting leads and how you solicit people, there are definitely multifaceted approaches to what you need to do. You need to cold call, you need to telemarket, you need to email, you need to direct mail,
social.
You need to have, you know, inbound stuff from social. You need to have the channel partners that are referring business to you. And until you maximize, you know, the wheels of the spoke, you're not going to be getting the kind of referrals and inbound leads that you want. But if you can focus on that, it's a long play. Like, I never quit doing that. If I have somebody comes to me and says, hey, I, you know, got an accounting firm over in St. Pete, and I've been following some of the stuff that you're doing, and I really think you'd be a great fit for us to refer some of our clients to, I'd love to sit down and talk to you about it. Yeah, I'll go talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that I am going to be a good fit. We need to figure that out. And, you know, I just think that so many times when we get that meeting, we're not gracious, right?
Yeah,
we're not gracious. Hey, thanks for taking time out to come have lunch with me. Really appreciate it. You know, obviously, I want to talk about business development for both of us, but I don't ever come in assuming that you're just going to automatically refer business to me. But what I can control is whether or not I refer business to you. So tell me a little bit about your company and how I can help. Done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that should be the way that you start that every time. I mean, if you just come in guns blazing looking for stuff for you, that's an immediate turnoff for me. If somebody wants to meet with me and they're coming in just telling me how, you know, how they can get business for me, or, and it's not a two-way street, then that's not the way to do it.
So Kyle, talk to me, man. What was the strategy when you were at ADP? I mean, that's what ADP is known for, in my opinion,
right?
Is going in and networking with CPAs. I mean, Kyle's wife's a district manager for them, so. I hear the stories from him. We've had people in here that are ex-ADP, and it seems like that's the play every single time, is going and networking with the accountants, because that's a lot of times who has the influence on that. So, like, if you were going to go open up a CPA relationship, what would you typically do that?
So, from ADP perspective, or just currently?
Yeah, no, I mean, well, so you are, okay, both. Thanks, Kyle. You just ruined it because, no, but I mean, that's the natural, that's the progression. I'm interested in, like, in your ADP days,
right,
how were you trained to go in and do that? How did you open that relationship, and what's different about how you do that today versus when you were with them?
So I had number one is I wasn't smoking hot, and a girl, because before that was who was in the territory. So I knew I had to be a little bit different getting appointments. I don't know if that was sexist or not, but I didn't have the ability to get certain appointments that the previous person did. So with Chattanooga and East Tennessee is a little bit weird. A lot of CPAs actually want to do payroll. So I had to come in at a different way, because I would come in.
So what were you doing? You were probably trying to sell them on their white label product.
Correct. Yep. So that's actually how I did it. I actually convinced my very first CPA. He had just moved from a different larger firm to his own. And I was like, hey, you need to be different. You need to have another service. And I convinced him to go to the ADP's wholesale product, even though he didn't want to. Also knew I wasn't going to get referred, but he ended up making a ton of money off of it. Probably brought 40 or 50 clients on, and charged, you know, 2 to 3 times what ADP was charging him. So, and then he sold it, and it was a very large cash thing to, I think, Paychex, to another payroll company. So the wholesale was big here. I didn't have any acquisitions. They really focused on trying to purchase, you know, the payroll business out of CPA offices. But the biggest thing was just, you know, even if you do it, let's get you signed up on wholesale, or if you just do payroll on your own, like, let us handle the big ones. You know, so even if, you know, that one that did the 30, 40, 50 clients, they would give us anybody over, say, 50 employees, you know, because they couldn't handle it, or they didn't have the manpower, or they needed to be on the larger ADP technology. instead of the small business for the ACA, the reporting, the benefits and things of that nature. And then some of them we would even pitch, you know, going to the total source or going to PEO, we would actually try and get the CPA firm set up on the PEO so they could see the benefits of it, get the, you know, and then they can even mention it to their clients and, hey, I'm on this special platform. You know, this is a great thing. It's helped us, you know, attract, retain the best employees. Maybe you should look at this as well. So from, you know, from that, it's just building, like for me, it's just how do I, when I go in now, it's like, how do I help? How do I protect? How do I be a resource for the CPAs? You know, so then it was giving them material, bringing extra value, making them look good. And also, like a CPA doesn't need to be doing payroll. They need, it's not a, it's a, unless they want to use it as a loss leader. So for most CPAs, it's like, hey, we do payroll, let's get that. And they're, you know, in, they're, you know, hooked on one thing. But otherwise, most of them didn't make money of it, and they can build, bill other services higher than what payroll costs. So just trying to convince them that they're worth more than just doing payroll and why we should take that off their plate. You know, same thing with their clients. Like, why, you know, why are you reviewing insurance policies? Why are you reviewing these things? Are you the expert? Let us come in and help you look good to your clients as well.
So the agency that you're with now, what's, you know, what are you guys going after? Are you going after similar stuff that you were, you know, had relationships with before, or is it completely different? You mentioned a niche earlier.
So we're all over the place still. I mean, there's definitely some of the guys that we have 10 to 15 agents running around. But for me, actually, I was going to bring this up is, you know, David, kind of how you got started is you found the carrier and built out, you know, what they wanted, where I kind of did the opposite. So when I first started, Guarantee was actually pretty much kind of in trouble. So I closed a home, care account. So not the health, home health, but just the like Visiting Angels franchise. And they're with Guarantee Insurance. So saved them 30% easily. And so I was like, oh, what's going on here? I think Guarantee might be in trouble. So I pulled off of DataLister, pulled a list of all the Guarantee clients I could find in Tennessee and just marketed those. And that's how I found, you know, good space and human services accounts, home care, because that's pretty much what they wrote up here. So just different ways like that. So, you know, with Guarantee going out, I wrote a number of human services, home care. So that's a niche. Then from the delivery contractor, we're actually looking at hiring. I reached out to an old, FedEx manager. He, you know, worked at some of the facilities. So we're looking at actually bringing on an ex, you know, FedEx employee so that can bring additional value. Then I can just say, hey, we're calling about your insurance. Just, hey, let's look at your, you know, FedEx things, help consult with you guys as well. So that's really it. Just seeing, you know, doing one thing, if it's the delivery contractors, the human services, or even I've got one client, at my old agency, he just kind of handed it to me. They do event and party rentals down in Georgia. You know, it was a $5,000 new business account. So here you go. I can, you know, have time for it. And then from him taking care of him, I've written over $1 million in premium, you know, of event rental, other companies just from being with him, sitting with him, taking care of him. And he likes to, you know, take care of the people that he refers and works with him. So I'll go sit with him at least monthly, drive down to Atlanta, and we'll just go through who can I go talk to. He sends a text with both of us included or makes a call right there, two or three calls every time I'm there. And I at least write two out of three of his referrals because they're so solid. And because I know what I'm doing I've learned that space. So that's the biggest thing. It's really, you know, just making calls. And I think you were saying, David, you don't have to make any cold calls. But now normally I want the cold calls to be cold calling on my delivery contractors or cold calling in the party rental space. You know, so it's not just, hey, I want to help with your workers' comp. It's like, hey, have you checked your inland marine lately to see if it's on a miscellaneous floater to make sure that things, items you rent from other people are actually covered if there's, you know, if it gets blown over. You know, so very specific things that get some thinking instead of just, hey, let's, can I help with your workers' comp? So it's been fun.
Cool. So what do you think the biggest surprise was for you as you came into the insurance industry?
From going from ADP, you know, you only have to get paid. You only really have to focus on new business. So where insurance is new business and your current business. So for me, managing that relationship and managing those clients and keeping them happy and doing the things I said I would do. You know, we get busy, and when we bring them on, we promise, hey, we'll do this, this, and this. So actually doing that, actually time management. So before it was, okay, I'm just going to prospect all day, or I've got two meetings, I'm going to see these people, where, you know, that quickly, as you grow your book of business, can get crowded out. And new business gets a lot of prospecting and networking just gets so much harder. And I think that goes back to, you know, writing the right kind of business. You know, the last few months I've given up, you know, I've transferred kind of 10 to 15, maybe even 20% of my business, of small business to kind of our house or small business, you know, units, because it's like, hey, if I can easily go replace those with middle market accounts in probably a few months, and it's going to be less headaches, I'm going to have less time and be able to actually, you know, service the clients that I do have better. Kind of like you say, David, you know, look at a boardroom and a seat, you know, the open seat, you know, that's really helped me. You know, do I want some of my clients in that seat or at the board table? The answer is no, you know, so it's really thinking about that and who can I service, but also it's doing a disservice to my clients, you know, or even the small ones I bring on. I can't give them the amount of time needed that maybe an agent that focuses on that can. So that's been the biggest thing, is just time management and figuring out how to balance, you know, new business, old business, and keeping everyone happy.
Cool. What do you think the most rewarding thing's been? And you can't say residual income.
keeping businesses in business, I'd have to say. I had like the Nashville tornado that came through March of 2020. You know, I'd just taken over the client, written, you know, completely changed his business income, changed how his policy was written. I begged him. I was like, please, you know, let me do this. You know, let's change this to a limit. Let's get your coinsurance down, whatever it may be, because I knew he was underinsured. And then I think that was in, you know, February. And a month later, the tornado wipes his building out. And, you know, we hit the limits, but also it was, you know, he was an event rental company. And it was COVID, you know, in the middle of COVID, or COVID had just started. And so he was fortunately one of the luckiest event rental companies, probably in the nation, you know, that got hit by a tornado. But if I wouldn't have written the policy correctly, he would have been, you know, in the same boat as everybody else as well. So that's, I think the coolest thing is just having situations like that. I don't sleep as well at night when storms come through because of that, but I can, you know, because I know I've written it to the best of my ability and I know what I'm doing. I mean, just the amount of business income that I see that's wrong, or, you know, I had one the other day, they were going to get a 93% co-insurance penalty. If something actually happened on their business income, and, just learning, you know, constantly learning, it's fun, and, really protecting people's businesses and their livelihood.
When you see an error like that on the business income, how do you bring that up to them?
So that one, it was, you know, I was looking at everything all together. It was kind of going through it. And I said, hey, you know, do you guys, you know, what if, you know, a fire, a tornado, or what, you know, something knocks your building out, like how long is it going to take to get you guys back up? You just kind of get the details there. And it's like, and we'll try and kind of get to a number just quickly of like, oh, you'll probably need what, you know, $3 million to get back up and running. It's like, well, do you think the, you know, current $28,000 check that you'll get, would be enough, or what would that go towards to, you know, to get you guys going? It's like, what are you talking about? You know, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. You know, so it's like, well, currently you've got, because of the way it's written, you'd get a check for $28,000. If something happens. So do you mind if we fix that for you, so you actually have a business, then we can dive in, go through the business income worksheet and really get them properly covered.
Nice.
So yeah, business, and that's I don't know, I've really tried to learn, like right now I'm really trying to dive into claims and workers' comp and like these delivery contractors. I just, you know, took over one because I was like, hey, we're going to help you with claims. We're going to do this. We're going to, you know, whatever it may be. And he's like, I've never heard of any of this before. So it's like, you know, I took it from an agent that had it for 20, you know, the dad for 20 years and never talked about any of the things to really help with claims, go to a have them go to a nonprofit. And you actually, I was looking at the experience mod. I quoted it 3 years ago, and I think it was 0.67 or 0.69. And I just pulled it up, and it's a 1.0 this year. So over the last 4 years, they've trended from a 1.67, 0.69, 0.78 to 1.0. And, you know, their policy's gone from 30,000 to 75,000, you know, over the last 4 years over small claims. I mean, the two claims, I think, you know, so it's, but most of it was if they would have paid in, not paid indemnity, it might be a 0.8 or 0.78 right now from what we're calculating.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. It's kind of like, I don't think I ever get sick of the fact that I can walk in and tell somebody how much indemnity impacts their workers' comp, knowing it's the first time that they've ever heard it.
Right.
And then just watching the reaction on their face and then being able to take a mod report and show them the difference between here's what it is, here's what it could have been, and then correlating both of those to the minimum mod overall. You know, I mean, for me, if I look at it, you know, the money and what we do is great. You'd be hard pressed to find another industry where you could make as much money and have as quick of a ramp up period and be in as much control as you are of your destiny in the insurance industry. And that's great. Don't get me wrong. I love money. I prefer to have lots of it, like to buy things, maybe a little too much. And so that piece is great. But for me, I really get the actual career satisfaction out of being able to go in and tell somebody something they've never heard before, knowing that I am unequivocally 100% correct in what I'm saying, and then being able to back that up by delivering on what we promise once they place their trust in us. So, I think that's probably the truth in every sales profession that I've ever had. But to your point, man, I mean, most of my clients, the overwhelming majority, like high 90 percentile, are going to take my advice and not ever push back.
Right.
They're going to realize that, you know, I'm giving them the advice because this is what you should be doing. A lot of them are on service fees, so the premium isn't going to matter, you know, to me from a compensation standpoint, and they know that. So they all automatically take my advice at face value for that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have a client right now that I got into basically a knockdown dragout, and he gave me the standard answer of, I can't afford to pay any more for my property insurance. When I got this account, they were underinsured by several hundred thousand dollars just on the building and the business personal property. They had no business income at all. None.
Jeez.
And this is a $4 million a year company, almost $5 million a year in sales. And so I told them, you need to raise your building to this, the way that your equipment is installed in the building based on the weight and the fact that it's permanently attached should not be classified as business personal property. It should be under the building code. And that's a much cheaper rate. So we're going to get you some pricing efficiency and we're going to move it up to where it should be. I'm not telling you it's going to be free, but we're going to, you know, minimize the damage by actually classing this stuff as building because that's what it should be classified as. And you need $1.5 million in business income at a bare minimum on a 1/3 monthly limit of indemnity. I always ask for a third. Very rarely do I get it. But I look at it this way. I need my clients to get back up and running as quick as they possibly can. If I'm going to have a monthly limit of indemnity on business income, I want them to be able to front load that with as much money as they possibly can so they can get back up and running. It should ultimately cost the insurance company less. It seems like more and more carriers are wanting to hang out at 1/6 or not offer anything other than a co-insurance option anyhow. I ended up selling him on the deal. It cost him about $15,000 a year more in premium than what he had prior. When Hurricane Irma came through a couple years back, absolutely shredded his building, shredded it.
Mm-hmm.
$1.8 million claim. They got paid every penny of it.
There you go.
If they would not have listened, if they would not have let me push back, and truthfully, if I wouldn't have been patient enough with them, I could have just said, you know what, go find somebody else to represent you. This is how we do it here. And you either comply or you don't. you know, this is somebody that I've known for a long time, have a long-term relationship with personally, like all the way back to my junior high days. And so I could push him a little bit. And when I, you know, when that claim happened, he sent me a letter. He's like, it's not lost on me that I didn't want to pay this and that you argued with me and you told me I want, because I told him, I said, it makes me sick to my stomach to know that I want what's right for your company more than you want what's right for your company. And right. He said, you did. He said, you wanted what was right for me more than I did. And I get that now. He said, I'm so glad that we made the decision because I'd have been out of business. I don't know what else you could possibly do for somebody outside of that to make you feel any better, man. I mean, agents shouldn't get their gratification. It's a certain type of gratification you get when you get a commission check. But the real gratification comes when you know that you did your job well and you know that you got your client out of a hot mess, or when they got into a bad claim situation, that the insurance did exactly what it was supposed to do. And I don't know that that'll ever change for me. I think that will always be the number one driver. I love writing the new business. I love getting paid. But I like the fact, and it's not just that we take care of them. It's when they take the time to acknowledge, hey, look, you know what? I didn't want to believe you. You pushed me into a situation that I needed to be pushed. And as a result, I'm better off for it. That's the ultimate for me outside of being an agency owner at this point. It's like being a dad watching your kids succeed. I'm happy. I'm truly happier for Kyle or Raphael or whoever goes out and writes a new policy. That's huge gratification for me as an agency owner, because these are guys who had no experience at all that have come in and trusted me to teach them this stuff, and they're out and making waves in the real world, making money.
Yep. No, I 100% agree.
And do you have to pick your battles? Because like I would say, like my Nashville, you know, guy, I got him to raise his business. I guess I battled on what was necessary. So I got him to raise the business income. I got him to fix that. But then, you know, pitched or proposed like, hey, we need to increase your building limit. You know, he had it in a different entity. He had it, I think, 5 million something. I said, hey, this probably needs to get closer to 7 million. He, you know, said no. And then, you know, so that, you know, was a check that he could have received. I walked in at 9 a.m. after the tornado hit and said, don't say anything. You did your job. You know, so he knew, it's like, look, he took a gamble. We got everything protected that was the most important. He's, you know, stayed in business, but he didn't get as much, you know, revenue off the building, but he still was okay, you know, because of the most important was taken care of.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing, man. Sometimes you do have to pick your battles and it becomes a multi-year process. Sometimes there really is no money, right? I mean, I can easily force somebody to pay $15,000 to $20,000 more than they were paying for their insurance, but they may truly not have it. Part of that's knowing, okay, is my client just giving me a hard time because they don't want to spend the money, or are they giving me a hard time because they can't spend the money? And there's a big difference there. And so if that's the case, you have to, I mean, this is where relationships are made for forever. You have to have that conversation with your client and say, look, man, I'm on your side of the table. I don't want there to be friction. Let's talk about what's going on. This stuff's all important, but let's organize it in order of importance and agree on it. And you obviously need to come up with a plan in a way that you can document that you both agreed on that plan.
Right.
Right? Because the last thing you want to do is go in and say, well, I think business income's the most important instead of building your business, your building limits. And then something happens and it doesn't have a business income issue, but it affects the building. And now they got to come out of pocket for money, or they have a nasty coinsurance penalty because you didn't adjust it the way you were supposed to. You don't want that blowing back on you if the real reason was because you guys agreed on something. And so I think it's important too, that as you're having these conversations, come up with a game plan. Sometimes it's okay, you know, if you've got a company that's growing, it's strapped or whatever else, it might be a 2 or 3 year process to say, these are the things that need to happen. Here's when we're going to do these things over the course of the next couple of years. But ultimately we need to be in this position. I'm not saying you need to do that every time, but in an extenuating circumstance, you're going to run into it, man. I mean, very few companies are going to be appreciative of you walking in and telling them that they're going to have to pay more.
Right.
And so I do think you pick your battles, and I think you come up with a realistic plan. Cool. Kyle, what else you got, man? Kyle Houck, what else you got for Kyle Stevens? Anything before we let him go?
I know you have a few books behind you there, and we talked about the work comp effect, but I wanted to see if there was anything else that you were reading out there that you think might be beneficial for other producers to get their hands on.
Well, currently, so I've just got a new Kindle since I misplaced it, as I do with everything. But the book I've been trying to read is Eat the Frog.
Yeah.
So, but that's the book I've been trying to read, which is, you know, very, how do you say, I think our lights went off.
You went dark on us.
I don't know if y'all can see anything, but yeah, so that's the book I've been trying to get going. So I'm excited to read that book because that's really one of my challenges. Actually, one of my goals for today was if I meet with a client, if I meet with someone, I need a 24-hour turnaround time of, you know, getting either the prospect information to our team, or if it's changes or whatever it may be, so I can just get it out of my mind. Because, you know, that's the thing, is just making sure that, you know, my brain has been filled so much with just so much, you know, going after so much, but just trying to focus in just on the delivery contractors, just on the event rental companies, instead of just driving by, you know, I think every, if you look at my phone, out of 10 pictures, 9 are, you know, sides of trucks, 10, you know, things of that nature, and one's of my kids, you know, so I really need to trim that down, because I think I've done it for 5 years now. I don't think I've looked through it, you know, one time probably,
right,
or gone back, you know, so it's really just, for me, that's just been the focus, getting things done, the time management, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's, if you don't have enough time, you're not going to be able to do anything. So if you don't have enough prospects, you don't have enough time, or you waste that much time, you know.
Yeah, you know what my problem is? My problem is never that I don't have enough time. My problem is that I misappropriate time.
Correct.
You know,
yep.
I have to put things on my calendar, and I joke about it all the time. I tell people, I'm like Ron Burgundy with his teleprompter when it comes to my calendar. If it's on my calendar, I do exactly what it tells me I'm supposed to do, just like he read everything that was on the teleprompter, you know. And as long as I can get it on my calendar, it's going to get done. My issue is when that meeting cancels and now all of a sudden I've got a block of my time freed up in the middle of the day, what am I doing with that, right? Mm-hmm. What am I doing to keep myself out of going down rabbit holes on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever else? And so that's kind of my deal, man. I've gotten so much better about time management and planning and just getting into a routine. Because again, I think a lot of salespeople are the same way. Some of it may be due to the fact I played ball as long as I did and having superstitions and stuff that way. But I've got my same routine every day, every week. I mean, like literally down to the minute, I do the same stuff all the time. And then, you know, my day is obviously planned by my calendar. But I mean, why do you think, I mean, I'll let either one of you answer. Why do you think that salespeople struggle so much with time management? To me, I just don't think it's, I think it's a lack of discipline. I don't think it's a lack of ability or a lack of tools.
Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, most of us, I think, you know, even me personally, if it's ADD or ADHD or just, you know, having so much, you know, I think what 40%, you know, probably are diagnosed or could be diagnosed, but that's the thing, is discipline. For me, it's, you know, if I don't know the steps or if I don't look at it, if it seems tough, you know, I'm going to get on Facebook or I'm going to go research something instead of, you know, submitting this or doing this. So it's more of just doing, getting into it, doing something we don't want to do, paperwork or whatever it may be, then to be able to do the fun things of closing deals or meeting with clients and doing those first. So, you know, it's not the time, it's just a commitment and just getting into it and doing it, for me at least.
Well said.
Cool. Well, what do we missed, man? I mean, we've been going almost an hour. I want to be respectful of your time. What haven't we covered did you think everybody needs to hear about Kyle Stevens?
I would just say, one thing I really love about clients and just kind of what we do is just really, actually, I was going to say this earlier, is just, you know, have a passion, you know, like the human, my most passion, and actually I'm going to a conference, you know, next month, about it as human services, you know, the developmental, you know, people that help, you know, people with developmental disabilities. You know, when I was growing up, I think it was elementary, middle school, you know, one of my best friends, had Down syndrome, you know, so it's, you know, for me, that passion of, you know, where is Neil? What is he, you know, what's people are there for him as he's in adulthood. So I've been able to take that and just our friendship and just what, you know, I've lost connection with him because I'm from Tuscaloosa, you know, he's in a different city, but how do these adults that should be treated the same, you know, these people are giving them their, you know, their lives and making, you know, minimum wage. How can I support them and make their jobs easier, get them more money back in their budget, but also, you know, protect them so they can keep doing what they do every day that I wish I could, but financially can't because of, you know, having to support my family. So, that's about it. I hope, I really want to been trying to bike ride a lot more. So I got my 4-year-old's finally gotten, his pedal bike, down, and my 2-year-old's gotten started on his balance bike. So, our family neighborhood outings have gotten a lot faster and more fun and dangerous though.
There you go. Well, listen, people, if you don't know Kyle Stevens, you should, because the guy's clocking 150 plus in new business revenue every year. And he's somebody you need to pay attention to and somebody you should follow because he does have it figured out. And it's not, again, uncommon from what I consider to be my ideal prototype. Somebody who went to work for one of the payroll companies, got that Fortune 500 sales training, and then came into our industry to make waves and make a huge splash. So I'm going to wrap it up, man. Kyle, tell them how they can get a hold of you, because I just told them all they need to know you now. So I know that you're very active on LinkedIn and some other places. I'll let you roll with it, and then we'll close her down.
Perfect. So phone number, if anybody has any questions, text me, 423-838-9998, or email is kstevens with a ph, kstevens@rssins.com, on LinkedIn, Facebook. And after this podcast, this is, my goal is to get more active and push myself out there more. So.
Cool.
Yeah. And on Tinder, what was, I'm just
kidding. that was, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool deal. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story with us. I think that your experience is valuable. I think we talked about a lot of good stuff today, man. So I look forward to this, Aaron, and making you a cartoon, my friend. So
excited about that.
There you go.
Good deal. Well, I hope you have a good week, everybody. We will catch you next time. See ya.
You've been listening to the Power Producers Podcast. You can follow Killing Commercial Insurance on Facebook and YouTube. And if you want to take your game to the next level, check out our book, The Extra 2 Minutes, and our website, killingcommercial.com.